Asia.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. In 13 hours of carnage in the United States, two shooters in separate incidents killed 29 people and injured dozens, leaving authorities searching for motives behind the mayhem. Police say the 24-year-old white male behind a mass shooting in Dayton, Ohio, early Sunday killed his sister and eight others before he was fatally shot by police. AP correspondent Julie Walker.
The emergency calls captured on broadcastify.com. Authorities say Connor Betts was killed by police less than a minute after he started shooting into the streets of a popular nightlife area. Anthony Reynolds was there.
People were just hearing the sounds and not knowing what was going on. So when we came around the corner and they seen the mob of people running, is when we started yelling, hey, shooter, this active shooter.
Mayor Nan Whaley.
The suspect was wearing body armor and used an AK like gun assault rifle, .223 caliber with high-capacity magazines, and he had additional magazines with him.
Betts' 22-year-old sister Megan was the youngest victim. The others ranged in age from 25 to 57. I'm Julie Walker.
In Texas, and the U.S.-Mexican border city of El Paso, the shooter opened fire at a Walmart store, killing at least 20 people and wounding 26. And at a news conference, the U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Texas, John Bash, provided an update and says he's been consulting with Attorney General William Barr.
We are conducting a methodical investigation with our partners, a careful investigation, but with a view towards bringing federal hate crimes charges under 18 U.S.C. 249 and federal firearms charges, which carry a penalty of death.
Authorities say that they are investigating a possible hate crime since he seemed to be targeting Hispanics. President Trump spoke to reporters as he departed New Jersey to return to the White House, and he offered his condolences again. In 13 hours, two shooters, two separate incidents, 29 people killed. This is VOA News. Hong Kong marchers staged sometimes violent protests on multiple fronts Sunday night, introducing their latest tactic to avoid, or I should say, evade riot police and tear gas as the demonstrations against a controversial extradition bill entered their ninth consecutive week. Reuters' Lauren Anthony.
Protesters targeted this police building on Sunday, where they threw rocks to smash its windows. And they have called for a mass strike to take place on Monday, aimed at bringing the Chinese-controlled city to a halt. Months of unrest were sparked by a now-suspended bill that would see people extradited to mainland China to stand trial. But their anger has broadened into wider discontent, prompting demands for dramatic reform and greater democracy. The protests mark the most serious political crisis in Hong Kong since its return to Chinese rule 22 years ago.
That is Reuters' Lauren Anthony reporting. Iran's Revolutionary Guards have seized an Iraqi tanker accused of smuggling fuel. That's according to state media on Sunday. It's a show of power amid heightened tensions with the West. David Doyle with Reuters.
State media said the boat was seized on Wednesday near Iran's Farsi Island, where the elite Revolutionary Guards Corps has a naval base. Iran has been fighting rampant fuel smuggling by land to neighboring countries and by sea to Gulf Arab states. But the seizure also comes at a time of heightened tensions with the West that have been rising since the United States pulled out of a nuclear deal between Iran and six world powers last year. Angered by intensified U.S. sanctions and the failure of European parties to salvage the pact, Tehran has decreased its commitments to the nuclear deal. In July, the Revolutionary Guard seized British tanker Stena Impero for alleged marine violations. That was 2 weeks after British forces captured an Iranian ship accused of violating sanctions on Syria.
Reuters' David Doyle reporting. Secretary of Defense Mark Esper has slammed China's destabilizing actions, as he calls it, in the Indo-Pacific region during his first trip to the region. Speaking to reporters in Sydney with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and their Australian counterparts, Esper said that the United States is firmly against a disturbing pattern of aggressive behavior or destabilizing behavior from China. Esper and Pompeo pointed to Beijing's militarization of islands in the South China Sea and accused it of promoting the state-sponsored theft of other nations' intellectual property and predatory economics. Sudan's Transitional Military Council and coalition of protest leaders initialized a power-sharing agreement Sunday. The two factions will formally sign the constitutional declaration on August 17th. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, August 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan's military and the protesters signed power-sharing agreement.
The agreement addressed the transitional period, which is 39 months, 21 months for the military and 18 for the civilians. And also, the Sovereign Council will contain 5 civilians and 5 military.
Let's report on Naba Muhyiddin in Khartoum. A critic of Uganda's president is sentenced to 18 months in prison. Rights group called on Mauritania's new president to address rights abuses. The International Organization for Migration and the German Embassy in Kenya will facilitate the reunion of migrant families in Europe. And DRC's main opposition will focus on fighting corruption.
I think that fighting against corruption has always been a slogan with the word, but has never been put in practice. We think that we need an independent body to fight against corruption, to denounce the corruption.
Jean-Pierre Bemba is the new leader of DRC's Lamuka opposition coalition. And this morning, a conversation with the Mandela Washington Fellow from Liberia. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudan's transitional military council and protest leaders Sunday signed a constitutional declaration that brought them one step closer to completing the formation of a transitional civilian government since the overthrow of President Omar al-Bashir. Reporter Naba Muhyiddin in Khartoum says the agreement spells out the possible makeup of the civilian transitional government and the timeline for achieving it.
The constitutional draft, which is the second step of the agreement between TMC and opposition groups in Sudan, has finally signed between both sides after months of negotiations and tensions. So they signed the governing structures, which are three structures: the Sovereign Council, the Minister's Council, and the Legislative Council.
When you talk about governing structure, this is how the power will be divided.
Yes, how the power will be divided and the relation between the three levels of the governing structure, the authorities of the Sovereign Council with the Minister's Council and Legislative.
Now, prior to this, there was this disagreement over how many civilians and how many military people will be in the transitional process. Did the agreement address that?
Yes, the agreement addressed the transitional period, which is 39 months. 21 months for the military and 18 for the civilians, and also addressed that the Sovereign Council will contain 5 civilians and 5 military, and the head of the Sovereign Council will be a civilian with the military background, as they agreed earlier. And also they agreed that the first file that they will work on in the first 6 months, it will be ending the war all around Sudan and settling up the peace agreements.
So, Naba, is it safe to say now that Sudan's troubles may be over with the signing, or there's more to come?
Actually, people are so happy but very cautious and skeptical, because they don't think that the issues will be solved in one day or another, as they think that right now the structuring and building time, people think that the issues will not be solved soon, the problems of Sudan, because it's very deep issues being accumulated of 30 years of Omar al-Bashir regime, and it's also a matter of structuring a new country after independence. They think that it's 60 years with no chance to build the country independently. So the challenge will be very big for getting rid of the primary issues that made Sudan in this situation and this point of conflicts, political conflicts, war conflicts, development and economy situation.
I understand that there will be an official signing ceremony sometime this month, then the formation of the cabinet. There's still different steps to follow.
Yes, actually they have a lot of steps, but we can conclude it in saying that 17th of August will be the formal celebrations and signing, as they are planning to invite state representatives and diplomats to celebrate in Khartoum. On August 18th, also formation of the Minister's Council will be made. And in the following days, there will be also celebrations of every level in the agreement. And then on the 20th of August, they will form the government and they will announce the name of different structures in the government.
That's reporter Namba Muhyiddin speaking with us from Sudan's capital, Khartoum. The new leader of the main opposition in the Democratic Republic of Congo says the group will make fighting corruption one of its missions. A recent survey by Transparency International of 35 African countries about corruption found that about 85% of DRC citizens said corruption was on the rise, and that 80% of their said their government was not doing enough to fight corruption. Jean-Pierre Bemba, chosen last month as leader of the Lamuka opposition coalition, says the group wants to establish a special commission to fight corruption.
I think the agenda in the opposition is to keep the opposition united. I think it's very important to have the same view of what should be the future of Congo for tomorrow. We have a different agenda, and target is to maintain the rule of state in Congo, fighting against corruption, which is a high level of corruption, I think, in the world now, and, of course, defend the interest of the people of Congo.
You have a new president, Mr. Félix Tshisekedi. Do you hope to work with him, say, along the lines of fighting corruption?
I think that in the position of the opposition, we denounce what is the corruption, the high level of corruption on the country and on the whole level of the state, in the province, in the executive. And really what we believe that is to claim to have independent body in Congo will denounce and will trace all these people corrupted and people that are really looting the country and taking the interest of the people and not allowing this budget of the country to grow at the same time that we are talking about the economic growth.
It seems to me the opposition is suggesting perhaps this new government. Do you think it is not doing enough to fight corruption, or do you want to expand what the government is doing in the area of fighting corruption?
I think that fighting against corruption has always been a slogan with the word, but never been put in practice. And we insist that independent body, because the corruption is coming from the government, and I saw the governor of different provinces on the state and so the level of the state everywhere, even in the different service of the country, police, army, everywhere. What we say is that it is not the people who are corrupted that will organize the body of the anti-corruption to fight against the corruption. We think that we need an independent body to fight against corruption to denounce the corruption.
You think you need a different body to fight corruption, meaning a commission on corruption?
I think so. Independent commission will fight against corruption, because if we ask the government to put a place a commission, it's like you are giving the same people that we denounce today to denounce themselves. It's not credible.
Jean-Pierre Bemba is the new leader of the main opposition Lamuka coalition in the DRC. You're speaking with me from Brussels, Belgium. A critic of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni will spend the next 9 months in prison after being convicted of cyber harassment. Stella Nyanzi wrote a poem in which she wished that Museveni had died at childbirth. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Makerere University researcher Stella Nyanzi has been jailed since November 2018 for her harsh online criticism of Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni. On Friday, Magistrate Gladys Kamasanyu sentenced Nyanzi to 18 months in prison, although credit for time served means she will only spend another 9 months behind bars. Supporters of Nyanzi jeered and hurled insults at the magistrate as she read her decision. But Kamasanyu pressed on, describing Nyanzi as unremorseful and asserting that the right to freedom of speech is not absolute.
Yet, at times the damage that has been occasioned to the victims or the complainant cannot be reversed. In this particular case, the whole president of this country was not spared. He fell victim. And in this matter, therefore, the convict is hereby sentenced to an imprisonment term of 9 months.
As soon as she completed her ruling, the magistrate was hit by a plastic bottle from the court audience. Nyanzi was arrested 2 months after she published an explicit poem on Facebook on September 16, 2018, a few days past Museveni's 74th birthday. In it, she condemns Museveni's 33-year rule and says he should have died in childbirth. She used words such as nauseatingly disgusting, bitterly sad, horrifically cancerous, and morbidly grave to describe his birthday. Nyanzi, who appeared before the court through a video conferencing system, did not stay calm, throwing all manner of obscenities, both verbally, and bared her breasts in protest.
Why are you touching my volume? Why did you bring me to this place without my consent? What is happening to justice in Uganda? Is this the sort of justice that works for us? A magistrate who is too cowardly to call my complainant.
By the end of her trial, Stella's lawyers were no longer appearing in court. One of them, Isaac Semakade, described the ruling as unlawful, unjustified, and not backed by a valid conviction. Isaac told VOA the 18-month sentence is plainly harsh and excessive for the offense.
Sentences for offenses based on freedom of expression must be relatively short to recognize the importance of freedom of expression despite the harm, if any, that may be perceived by any sector of the public. There was no evidence led to show any statistics regarding computer misuse in this country.
Prosecutors throughout the trial insisted that Nyanzi's post and indecent words against Museveni and his late mother were intended to disturb their peace and a right to privacy. Stella still faces other charges of cyber harassment and offensive communication stemming from her post where she referred to Museveni as a pair of buttocks. Halima Asmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Today's Monday, August 5th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The International Organization for Migration and the German Embassy in Nairobi, Kenya, have officially launched the Family Assistance Program to facilitate the reunification of migrants with a person who has been granted protection status in Germany. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
At the Family Assistance Program facility in Nairobi, dozens of people lined up waiting to be assisted. Most of them claim it has been a challenge trying to reunite with their families, especially those living in Germany who went to Europe as migrants while escaping from violence, terrorism and economic instability from their home countries. Abdi Guward from Somalia has been separated from his wife and children for at least 4 years. He says it has been difficult for him to secure travel documents.
My wife and I and the children were living as a family in Somalia. So we were attacked by the group Al-Shabaab. And so the main reason was actually for my wife and the child to get somewhere that is conducive, that is safe, that they can have a normal life. And that's the main reason why they went to Germany. It's been a very big challenge before this program because I didn't know where to start. I wasn't getting enough information. But with this program, I have people who are talking my language. They've been very helpful.
The Germany ambassador to Kenya, Annette Ganta, said the beneficiaries of the program, mostly from Somalia and Eritrea, will be served from Nairobi and help them reunite with their families in Germany.
This process and this assistance here in the IOM Center is free of charge. You must know that. We want to help mothers and fathers to reunite with their children or vice versa, children to go to Germany to be reunited with their parents, but also reunite just wives and husbands that have lost touch on that way.
As per the IOM, 832,989 movements were tracked through the organization's displacement tracking matrix in Eastern Horn of Africa in the year 2018. Project Coordinator, International Organization for Migrants, Eleonora Savino, said that so far the program has benefited over 1,000 migrants.
I mean, actually, most of our caseload normally are women with children. Or sometimes we have even unaccompanied minors. And these are the cases that we try to as well expedite. We try to identify these cases so they can be expedited also according to the German law.
According to the International Organization for Migrant Statistics, leading countries on migrants are Ethiopia and Somalia, both standing at 60% and 27% respectively. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Amnesty International has called Mauritania's new president, Mohamed Ould Ghazouani, to address what the group calls the country's appalling human rights record. Ghazouani was sworn into office last week, and Amnesty West Africa campaigner Kine Fatim Diouf spoke to Ricky Stryak about Ghazouani's human rights record.
During the election, Amnesty and joined other civil society organizations, and we call each of the candidates to sign a manifesto to engage, to commit to promote human rights in case of victory. Unfortunately, despite all our official requests and follow-up, the new president, Ghazouani, did not sign this manifesto. And also, Amnesty noticed during the election that in his program and during the campaign, he neglected to commit to improving the disastrous human rights situation in the country. So we hope that now that he's the new president, he will change the practice and commit really to end the past in Mauritania and engage to protect and promote human rights in Mauritania.
And before he was elected president in June, did he have a record, either personal or political, of speaking up against human rights abuses in the country or promoting human rights?
No. Unfortunately, no. As you know, he's one of the people who participate to the coup with the President Aziz, and he was the Ministry of Defense. So we never heard him speaking against discrimination or slavery or on human rights in general. So we hope that now he's the president, now that he knows that Mauritania has many obligations in terms of international human rights, but also in the constitution, he will strongly commit to end the cycle of impunity and human rights violation in Mauritania.
When the results of the election were announced in June, there were protests which were followed by mass arrests of nearly 100 people, including opposition supporters and journalists, by security forces in Mauritania. Has the new president addressed this, and have those people been released?
Unfortunately, we know he didn't speak about that, this situation. People are still in detention after the mass arrests. Some of the West African national have been deported back to their home country after being accused of destabilizing the peace. Just, you know, the last journalist arrested was released a couple of days ago.
That was Kine Fatim Diouf, Amnesty International campaigner for West Africa. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. Each year since 2014, the Young African Leaders Initiative, YALI, brings to Washington young African leaders to take advantage of the Mandela Washington Fellowship. Among the goals of the fellowship are to build and sustain a network of young African leaders, strengthen ties between Africa and the United States, and prepare fellows for future leadership opportunities in Africa. This year, about 700 fellows were assigned to 28 universities throughout the United States. Wilfred Zion is one of the Mandela Fellows from Liberia. You are here on the Mandela Fellowship, and you are just about to go back to Liberia and Africa. What exactly did you learn, and what are you taking back?
The first thing I would say is the fellowship took me out of my comfort zone. Every young person like myself want to be in their comfort zone where things are easier and where you can navigate around. And you find yourself in a space, you got a job to do, young people look up to you. So you could be complacent if you are that kind of a person. So when I applied for the fellowship last year, I wanted something new. So coming here for the past 6-7 weeks, I felt like, okay, this is what you just needed. So the fellowship provided us and myself the opportunity to see things differently. Here in the U.S., every young person I met is ambitious. The fact that there are people here who are not doing what you say, what I would call pursuing other things, but many people I met here are ambitious. They're never comfortable. They want to try new things. They want to explore the world. They want to challenge themselves with ideas. And so these are the things I picked up. And when I get back home, most of the things I learned in school, people I met, I know it's not going to be easy, but I'm going to implement and try and see what works for Liberia.
What exactly do you do in Liberia?
So in Liberia, I am the head of finance for an international nonprofit called Partners in Health. But besides that, I got challenged by several issues. So I set up my own nonprofit, and the nonprofit work with young people, giving them what I call the soft skills to be job ready. And then we also work with teachers. In fact, it's not because I'm a trained accountant that brought me to the U.S. It's because of that volunteer work that brought me here. And I think I've learned a lot what it means to volunteer, because if you are in the space where not many people are fortunate, then it becomes a burden for you to reach out to those who you want to be like you.
You talk about comfort zone, and you said that many of the young people you've met while on the fellowship here in the United States are ambitious. How do you compare to Liberia?
So back home, and I'm not saying there are not many ambitious people, but the syndrome of complacency that I earlier spoke about is something that each and every one of us have to avoid, because I call that the trap of success. So I'm the only person who finished high school in my family. That's not sufficient. I'm the only person who got a bachelor degree in my family. That's not sufficient. Here, bachelor degree and even master's look like the beginning for most of the people we met, or most of the people I met. That's the challenge I want to throw out there.
Of course, the complacency you talk about, maybe lack of resources may contribute to that.
Exactly. The average person is poor back home, but there are also opportunities. So it depends on how you relate to your poverty.
Wilfred Zion is a Liberian 2019 Mandela Fellow. He spoke with us here in our Washington studio. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Rwanda, where Mali has been crowned champions of the FIBA Under 16 Women's African Championship. The Malians dispatched Egypt 84-48 to win their sixth title at Amahoro Indoor Arena in Rwanda capital, Kigali. Mariam Koulibaly scored a game high of 30 points, picked 7 rebounds and 5 assists to inspire the West Africans to an unprecedented record 6th African title. Earlier in the day, Angola defeated Mozambique 67-59 in the third place game. Staying with basketball news, the 2019 FIBA Women's Afro Basket Championship will dunk off in Dakar, Senegal from August the 9th. The 26th edition will feature 12 teams from across the continent. Nigeria's the Tigress is the defending champion and will be hoping to put up an impressive showing in Senegal. Aisha Balaribi and Adora Elonu are members of the Nigerian Women National Basketball Team to Senegal.
We're going to go there and do what we do best. And what we do best is to win, to be the champion. And as you can see, my girls, we're all ready. And we have new players, about 2-3 players. So I believe, you know, we're working hard right now. And when we go there, by the grace of God, we're going to take the champion.
I think you expect more or less of the same, how we were in the World Cup. We're keeping the same identity. But yes, with the pressure, I think it'll be more exciting. We kind of not really surprised everyone in the last championships in Mali. But I think in Senegal, they'll be coming for us. But, you know, it'll be vice versa.
In athletics news, lawyer for South African athlete Caster Semenya says the Olympic 800 meters champion will fight for her own rights and that of other female athletes. Dorothy Iskariam's comments comes as Semenya was denied a chance to defend her world title in Doha in September. The 28-year-old Caster Semenya is battling a ruling by the International Association of Athletics Federation over rules that will require her to take drugs to counter her naturally high testosterone levels.
I would like to mention 4 key human rights that are at stake here. The first is a prohibition against discrimination. The second is the right to physical integrity. That means that nobody can touch your body against your will. Then there is the right to economic freedom. And last but not least, the respect for human dignity.
And on to football news. Bafana coach Stuart has revealed at his media conference to announce his resignation that he ignored a cancer scare to oversee the 2-1 African Cup of Nations AFCON qualifying victory against Libya that saw the national team of South Africa reach Egypt 2019. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Monday, August 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte in Washington.
Hello. Thank you for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. This month, Border Crossings is giving away a really cool Voice of America t-shirt. Hooray! If you want to win one of these awesome shirts, all you have to do is make a song request for our show.
I see it. I like it. I
want it, I got it, yeah.
Tune into Border Crossings at 1500 Universal Time every weekday in August for your chance to win.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.